So I had a short discussion with Thai friend, and he gave me the simile from the sutta to compare the five khanda as a snake. As a snake. Can you elaborate more about this simile to have more understanding? He said in many sutta, Buddha compared the khanda as a snake, like rupa as a snake. If we take care about the body, for example, we care much for the body and the snake can bite us, oh, it may have the meaning of the harmfulness of the five khanda.
Because we think each of the khandas is so pleasant or so nice or so beautiful, but actually each one is dangerous, very dangerous. It arises and falls away and is the object of clinging again and again.
Dangerous is attachment to five khanda.
So even the arising of the khandas are dangerous because they are the object of attachment. So even the khandhas of the Buddha are dangerous in this sense. That's why for the one who has no more ignorance, they realize that each khandha that arises and falls away is so dangerous. And this is why the understanding turns away from the conditioned to the unconditioned.
I see. Thank you.
Even if it's not the object of our clinging, what about the object of others clinging? So whatever arises and falls away is dangerous in this sense, like a snake.
So what about them?
So not dangerous at all. No danger. But in truth,
another topic that I'm just reminded of that Hung brought up in one of the Vietnamese discussions when you were absent. She asked us about the three kinds of tanha, kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. And we know kama tanha refers to clinging to sense objects. And bhava tanha, I mentioned that it can either be clinging without wrong view or clinging with wrong view. And then it is sasata ditti, the idea of permanence, because like with the khandhas, there isn't the understanding of the arising and falling away. What is seen seems to last, seems to be permanent. What is touched now seems to be permanent. It seems to last, seems to be something. And the third kind is vibhava tanha, which is always with wrong view. The idea of nothing at the end of life, ucheda ditti, annihilation view. But I have a question following from Hung's, because when we talk about bhava tanha, I always understood it can just be referring to clinging, like bhavasava, just clinging, however subtle or deep, or it can be with wrong view when it is sasata ditti. But in one of the discussions, I may have misheard you, but I thought you were saying that bhava tanha is always with wrong view. So I'd like to just clarify that point.
When we talk about view.
Only when we're talking about view, because otherwise, I think that's what I said in the Vietnamese discussion. It can just be with clinging small or just clinging to being, clinging to existing.
Just like we talk about the result of dana, the last one.
The pua.
Yes.
No more pua. In that sense. Because it has to be right understanding with that sila of dana. Otherwise, it cannot condition the understanding of the truth to become enlightened. So even dana can condition moment of detachment to whatever is now clung to. Because it can give away, see, at moment of giving things away, and that moment it gives away attachment too, little by little. And when it has understanding with it, more understanding of what should be let go or give away. Not this, just the realm, but the end of all realms. No boa anymore.
This is following from a discussion we had in another session, in a Chinese session, where there was some discussion about bawa and vibawa at dana. And for those who weren't present, could you say a little more about the distinction between bawa and vibawa? Vi means not. So bawa is existence or realm, vibawa, not existence or realm. Would you say a little more about the distinction?
And it can be wrong view, a kind of view, no more birth, see, which is wrong. As long as there are conditions, there must be birth.
Right.
So vipawa in that sense.
It's like vipawa tanha in the sense of thinking there's no more.
When you use the word ditti, it's just vipawa.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anything more to clarify for those people who were not present, who don't really know what we're talking about, Vincent?
The bhava and vibhava we were just talking about is about the dana paramis. And it's in the definition of dana paramis in the manifestation part. So it mentioned about in the time, it's mentioned about bhava sompa and vibhava sompa. So that's a little bit different than the one in the English translation. So that's why we had a discussion. And this is from the book of Ajahn about the 10 perfections of paramis.
Bhava and vibhava sampati. The sampati is the Pali word.
About the perfections, because it's always stressed that a good quality is only a perfection if there is no idea of self who is doing it. And when we hear adhitana or decisiveness and to virya, to continue developing understanding, it seems there is a notion of self who is doing so, because we are so used to think of a notion of self, but then it's not a perfection. And it's very useful if Ajahn can elaborate more on the perfections. Without, there should not be any idea of self. And then the perfections are very necessary to help in the development of understanding.
If there is no understanding at all, can there be the understanding at moment of dana or any moment? Even when one has the understanding, right understanding of the truth, it doesn't mean that right understanding arises all the time at moment of dana or sila and so on. That's why without the kusala citta, even at that moment, no understanding. But that underline is understanding of the truth, but no condition to arise at that very moment, depending on the moment whether dana can be with kusala, with understanding, or only no kusala without any understanding, but there is the enrooted understanding of no one and it's a reality. So it depends on condition for each moment to arise with any dana or any kusala. That's why even it does not arise with a right understanding, but it's there by condition. And when there is more understanding, there is more moment with right understanding.
When you say it's there,
Okay. Can there be right understanding all the time?
Not all the time.
By conditions. So yeah. At moment of dana, it's just like at the moment. But it's dana, kusala moment. So it depends on whether at that moment there are conditions for right understanding to arise to understand that moment or not. Otherwise, it's not parami because it takes quite a long time for kusala to clear away akusala stage by stage.
So many moments of dana, but no perfection.
To be truthful, there can be moment of kusala with understanding or without understanding. But it doesn't mean that the person who has right understanding doesn't have right understanding at all, but no condition for its arising with dana at that moment, depending on conditions. Even right now, we understand what satipatthana is, but it depends on whether there is conditions for right understanding of whatever is there now. Arise or not. Even there is the understanding of satipatthana, see, but it doesn't mean that now we're talking, there is satipatthana in between or not, only by conditions. And panya understand that, not just at moment of talking about dhamma, any moment, dana or sila, or even when the akusala is so strong, but right understanding is strong enough to understand it by conditions. Until there is less and less ignorance about the reality right then.
The perfections are important, but not so often they arise.
It's moment of kusala anyway. Otherwise, it's moment of akusala instead. If it's not moment of if it's not moment of kusala.
And usually people think about, when we hear about dana parami, people think about acts of goodness, acts of generosity, stories about giving, like giving at the foundation or in the temple. But actually we're just talking about moments of citta, aloba, cetasika, with citta for a moment, with or without panya. Not a situation or an act as people are used to thinking about it.
And I was just reflecting that although we say the perfections are necessary for the development of understanding, understanding itself is necessary for the perfections, as you pointed out. So it's really a case of each supports the other. So we don't have to think of one as being necessary for the other in that sense. One just develops understanding as far as possible. One develops kusala as far as it happens. And the two should support each other. And when the two coincide, arise together, then it's the perfections.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
John, I thought what Nina was asking was whether there's perfections when at that moment there's no understanding. And I thought Achan was saying that perfections, they are kusala, conditioned by accumulated understanding, and which counts as a perfection even when there's no anya at the time.
So perfections depend on right understanding. Otherwise, dana can be parami or perfection without understanding at all.
And Achana was thinking about all the stories about the bodhisattvas' past lives, all the kusala that we hear about them being perfections. It's not like there was panya all the time. There was just those acts that were conditioned by accumulated panya. So that's why there were perfections, even when during lives when the Dhamma is not does not exist and not heard.
And by Pakkattu Upanishadapachaya, what condition the kusala with arpanya, see? Even there is the understanding of the truth, but it doesn't mean that there must be panya arising all the time. All depends on pachya and whether there is good panya with it or not with it. It is by conditions. Pakkattu Upanishadapachaya. And understanding this when there is no panya with it, is it because of understanding is there, enrooted, but it's not time for conditions to condition it to arise at that very moment, because all depends on conditions. And panya understand that. Not anyone can do or can have anything at will. So now, any moment is parami or not? Because there is understanding that even panya does not arise with this moment, it's there. Otherwise, that cannot be parami, the dana, the moment of kusala.
This point, Ajahn, this point I have to consider more, even if there is no panya. Is there not the inclination of if no enlightenment attained yet, but the danger of I am giving or I am doing this, the idea of self coming in?
What about the Bodhisattva when he was born monkey? See, can that monkey be Bodhisattva?
A monkey?
Of the enrooted right understanding from moment to moment, long time ago, and this moment, talking about the right understanding, and when there is no kusala arising with panya, but what about the understanding which has enrooted little by little,
which has been accumulated.
So Nina, to put it another way, the difference between the good deeds conditioned by past understanding, accumulated understanding, and good deeds not accumulated by understanding is that with understanding accumulated, the kusala is less liable to be taken for self.
Yes.
Because even at moment of giving away things, it's giving away attachment and ignorance too, because that moment is wholesome. And how can there be wholesome moment all days? Impossible. But the understanding that has developed can get less, right? Not more, but not less.
This point,
why I need to have more accumulation of wholesome deeds. Because at moment of wholesome discourse, no ignorance, no attachment, and no other unwholesome realities. Less, right? Moment to moment.
And I think, Sukhin, we can just say generally that the understanding conditions kusala, even kusala without understanding, so it can be parami at those moments, but we go very wrong if we try to find out or try to determine whether this is parami now or that is parami or this giving is conditioned, because who can know? By Pakkattu Upanishadapachaya, it's so broad, and the understanding of any time in the past can condition giving or kindness now. So it's just generally we can say the giving or the kindness can be parami even when it's without understanding, because it's being conditioned by understanding. That's all. Not try to work it out.
And the important point is that without understanding, there's no parami. So it's always a question of understanding or not.
And as I understand it, all kusala is a support for the development of insight. Whether it's kusala that falls within one of the paramis or not. I mean, one doesn't have to think about whether kusala is this parami or that parami. The understanding is that one takes any opportunity for the development of kusala without thinking about the fact that it's a parami, just as one develops understanding without thinking about whether this moment is understanding or not. These things happen by conditions.
And thinking about whether it's parami or not, that's the idea of self, which is not parami.
And there can be such a parami during act of lying.
Right. During what?
During the act of lying.
Lying.
Lying. Lying. I mean, someone...
What is the act of lying? What does it mean by the act of lying as opposed to just lying?
Means the a long different moments of telling a lie, and during that process there could be such a parami.
Can a kusala be parami?
No. A different moment, just like when some bhikkhu
underlying parami, understanding, but no condition for the arising of kusala. Because of lots of accumulation of akusala. But right understanding can understand the nature of that moment. When it's wrong, when it has developed to the degree that no matter what, unexpectedly, right understanding arrives and understand that by right. Conditions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like when I mentioned people talk about the act of giving or the act of lying, and they think of many processes and a long story.
Right.
But in
right.
terms of paramatta, we're just talking about particular cittas. So there cannot be kusala, there cannot be parami in the act of lying, because lying is the akusala citta. So there cannot be any parami at that moment of lying. So there is actually no act of lying. There are just different kusala and akusala cittas, and the kusala cittas are not an act of lying.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, during the akusala kamapata.
But when it's akusala kamapata, what is the reality of akusala kamapata? It's not an act of many moments.
It's just like during the act of dana,
what
there
is
can
the
be
act
akusala. Like the whole process of giving to the person on the street, and the motivation is kusala, but it can be akusala easily.
Like what that. Is the kamapata? Is it a whole process of giving to the person on the street?
For example, killing a mosquito. The mosquito need to be killed to complete the action, right?
But what is the kamapata?
The kamapata is from the intention.
What is the karma?
Intention.
The intention. And right. How long does that last?
Just fleeting moment.
A moment. So right. At that moment of akusala chetana, akusala karma, there cannot be any kusala at that moment. At other moments, like conventionally you might say, oh, that was part of the act of killing. But in terms of reality, only those moments with akusala.
What I understand Vince to be conveying is that even when there is the level of akusala that is kamapata, such as lying or stealing or something, so long as there's a developed understanding and other paramis, there can be such a barami arising at any time. Isn't that what you're saying, Vince?
Yes. That's what I meant. An extreme example in the text, the venerable bhikkhu who used a knife to kill himself. And then while he killed himself, and he did kill himself, but he was fully enlightened.
By conditions.
Right.
So can akusala be parami?
No. Right. Sure. Mm-hmm.
So conventionally we say it's an act of killing or an act of taking life, but in absolute terms, only that
bond is changing them. It's the killing or the taking land. So there cannot be such a parami at those moments of killing, even though conventionally speaking, from the outward appearance to the other bhikkhus, they may talk about the act of killing. Actually, the moments of such a parami and the moments of killing
are different moments of kusala and akusala. And I'm stressing it is because I actually even hear it commonly, even around here, people talk about, oh, such a great act of giving or such a...
this or that. And I think it's easy to forget that giving is just a moment. Killing is just a moment. Karma is just a moment. Otherwise, we have a story about killing lasting for a period of time, giving lasting for a period of time. But the point of the teachings is to understand the absolute realities of the Dhammas themselves.
I was just stressing at the end that we have ideas, conventional ideas about act of killing or the monk who took his own life or acts of giving. But actually in absolute reality, there is just one moment, one kusala moment, one akusala moment. So the monks who saw the bhikkhu take his life, what they observed is a conventional idea of taking life. And the Buddha pointed out that at the actual moment of passing away, there was no kilesa, no thought of killing at all. So we have to come back to the moment, the absolute reality at the moment. Otherwise, we always have a story and have an idea that there can be kusala during the act, but actually there's just one moment.
I have a little bit of a technical question. Yesterday, you were very precise, Sarah, in saying that seeing itself wasn't kusala or akusala, and it's stuck with me. And we were talking about vipaka cittas, and I stressed that there are jatis, and sometimes you said, well, it's shorthand. We say like there are five pairs of dvipancha vijnanas, and each pair has one citta that is kusala vipaka citta and the other is akusala vipaka citta. So that's what I wanted to explain to Carmen, that sometimes vipaka and akusala are used. But my question is about votapanna. Cannot at this moment remember if it's a vipaka citta or kriya. I don't know.
Kriya citta.
Oh, all right. But I understand you when you say seeing is not kusala or akusala, when I recall that the function of votapanna in the sensor process is determining whether the javanas be following it, succeeding it, are going to be kusala or akusala. So that means that the cittas before votapanna cannot be yet. Is that right? Kusala or akusala before it's been determined.
So the seeing consciousness and the two cittas following it are vipaka cittas, the result of either kusala karma or akusala karma. And so we call them kusala vipaka or akusala vipaka, even though they're not kusala or akusala. And they have to be followed by another citta before the javana cittas can arise and experience the object with kusala or akusala cittas. So that it's one more citta, which is a kiriya citta, which is like a bridging citta between those vipaka cittas and the kusala or akusala cittas that follow. In English, they translate commonly vottapanna as determining, but it doesn't actually determine. It's one citta and it conditions the next cittas by anantara paccaya. But what is the real condition, the real cause of the kusala or akusala cittas that follow? There have to have been the preceding cittas by anantara and samanantara paccaya, but there has to be the accumulation, the tendency of kusala or akusala in order for lobha to arise. There has to be that accumulated habit of lobha by pakatu upanisya paccaya, which is the main condition for attachment to arise, even the very subtle asava arising in the sense door process. So the vottapanna citta, it is just one more citta following the vipaka cittas before those kusala or akusala cittas can arise. It doesn't determine whether kusala or akusala arises. That is by pakatu upanisya paccaya and other conditions, but particularly by pakatu upanisya paccaya. And which citta performs that function of vottapanna?
It's in the sense door process, but it's a manodhatu?
Manodwara vajana citta.
Yes, that's a manodwara
vajana. Kind of citta, the same kiriya citta, manodwara vajana citta, that has this function in the sense door process and the function of adverting to the mind door cittas in the mind door process.
So we shouldn't take it too seriously when in Servio Faramata Dhammas, vottapanna is described as determining whether it will be succeeded.
Shanti, it's, that word, it's a misleading word. However, okay. it's been used for a long time, and that's what people use to translate it as, but it's not a good translation. As sort of Sarah's intimated there by what she has said, because it sounds like it's predetermined, and that's completely wrong. And as Sarah pointed out, it's conditioned by a number of factors. But it's not determining. It's more, a kind of a following citta than anything else, but it's difficult to describe as a following citta. So the word they're used probably by the original translators, who potentially may not have had a really firm grip on the nature of Dhamma. And so this label has been given to vottapanna as determining, but it's not really helpful, and perhaps there would be many people who would describe it as wrong. But anyway, as long as we understand that it's a conditioned Dhamma and it's not one that's determined.
Yes, thank you. It helps because it gets rid of a lot of questions, because if it would have been determining, the question would have been, what in the cittasikas is so determining about it? Now all these questions can be skipped. Thank you.
Hi, Sarah and Sundara. So what is the proper translation of vottapanna? It's very hard to think about its function. So it's not determining whether the following citta, that is Javana citta, would be kusala or akusala. If it is not the case, then how do you translate vottapanna into English?
Well, perhaps I would translate it as following.
Sundara, you did a great email before. You talk about station, vottapanna. So it's like before this citta, that's three vipaka citta. And then after this kriya citta, that's the javana citta with the kusala or akusala karma. So that citta is like a station, like a bus station. You go there and then change the bus to different directions. You had email. Excellent. I like it.
No, thanks for that, Vince. It's starting to become a little clearer. It is, yeah, it is a point or a station, you can say. And from memory, the Pali conveys that concept. However, I can sympathize with the original translators who have used that word determining, because station might sound a bit strange, but I believe that is much closer than that idea of determining, which we know to be really quite misleading and many would say quite wrong. So it is a kind of a station, a point where just prior
transition
to
the transition point.
Yeah.
The transition between the vipaka cittas and the kusala akusala, but there's also a function. It has its function. So we cannot refer to the transition or the station as the function. So it has the function of acting as a transition, we could say. But it's helpful to remember, I think we briefly mentioned this yesterday, that there are 18 ahetuka cittas without kusala or akusala roots. That is the 7 akusala vipaka cittas, the 5 moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, sampaticcana, santirana, and the 8 kusala vipaka, which are ahetuka, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, sampaticcana, and 2 kinds of santirana, and then the 3 kriya cittas. So they are rootless. So these are the sense doored verting, the mind doored verting, which has the function of votapanna, of being a transition, and the hasitupata. But it just helps to understand that it's a rootless citta. It's just a rootless citta that acts as transition between the vipaka cittas and kusala and akusala. So actually it doesn't determine anything, but it has to be there to condition the next citta by anantarapachya. I don't know if Ajahn has anything else to add.
Just want to say that, Sarah, your word
bridging
helps a lot.
A
function of bridging. Very nice. Yeah.
Bridging.
Thank you.
I once heard it determined about the object. So I'd like to hear more.
What do you mean, determined by the object or about the object, Tam?
Because following the other cittas, like the sampaticcana and the santirana, sampaticcana receive the object. The santirana investigate the object, and then the vutapanna determine the object. It's what I thought I heard before in the discussions.
The object, for example, the visible object that has been seen and then experienced by the following cittas, how can the votapanna determine the object? Because it's experiencing the same object that's been experienced by the other cittas.
Well, what I understand about it is the santirana investigate the object. So the following citta knows a little bit more about the object than the santirana citta. So that determination is in that sense. It doesn't mean that it decides the object to be that, but it just experience the object Well, it's what I thought I heard, but we can hear Ajahn say more about this. Thank you.
I think we can talk in terms of absolute realities. For example, the function of citta. When nothing impinges on the ideas, it cannot condition the reality. which attend to the object to make way for the other citta to experience the object. So the first of the vithijitta, the first citta of the vithijitta is panja, five, doorways, panjadwara, and avachana, attend to the object which impinge on such and such base, right? The first citta, it cannot see, it cannot hear yet, but it makes way for that vipaka to experience the object. Panja, the vara, vachana. It has its function only for the five doors only. See? And as the santrena, what else should be perform its function? It cannot be kusla or akusla instantly, because the panchatavara vachana and the citta which experience the object and the sampatichanna and sandhira just only one moment at a time. But it's enough for the accumulation to condition kusla or akusla citta at moment of experience that object. That's why how can the kusla and akusla arise after the vipaka? The end of vipaka is santirna. So there is a citta, mano devara vachana. See, mano, mind, usually it arises before the process through the mind. And but when it sends, though, it does not perform that function, but it performs a function, it's making way for kusla and akusla, which is ready to arise after that, after experiences the object as vipaka, santirana and sampatichana, and then santirana, and then manotavara vachana, but it does not perform the function of like a domain, but it performs the function of making way for kusala and akusa, which is ready to experience that object by accumulation to be lopa, mulacitta, or dosa mulacitta, or kusala at different levels. That's why there are three kinds of manasikara. Aramana, manasikara means the aramana cetasika, manasikara cetasika, which is attending to the characteristic of the object. That's why the manasikara cetasika arises with each citta, because it performs a function of attending to the characteristic of reality. And this is aramana to the object. And the other is viti, patipadaka, manasikara. It means that viti is the process. So the first citta of the process is the panja, dvara, vachana, citta. So it is a viti, patipadaka, manasikara. And for manasikara, no matter it arises through the mind or the sensor, but they have different function. When it arises with the sensor process, it doesn't perform the function of manodavara, but it performs the function of vortapana, makes way for kusla or kusla. That's why another word for manodavara vachana is chavana patipadaka manasikara. Whenever it arises, it makes way for kusla or akusla. That's why after it has arisen, what follows is kusla or akusla or kriya for arahatas. So it does matter what word is used, what term is used for such and such reality, but its function and its characteristic is different to be known at moment when it's there. No word, but kusala and akusala and kriya citta for arahata cannot arise before chavanapatipataka, which is manodvara vachana citta. By way of pachya, antara pachya, and samanantara pachya. No one there at all.
So on these three kinds.
One kind is the cetasika manasikara, which arises with
every citta, which is the first one Ajahn was referring to as Aramana Manasikara, because it attends to the object at every moment. One is the sense-stored verting consciousness, the Panchadwara Vajana Citta, which is referred to as the Viti Patipadaka Manisikara, because it is the first citta in the sense door process. It is the beginning of that process, that Viti process. And the third one, the one that she referred to as the Javana Patipadaka Manisikara, refers to the Manodwara Vajana Citta, which also has the function of Votapanna in the sense door process. And no matter whether it has the function of mind-adverting consciousness as the first citta in the mind-door process, or the function of Votapanna in the sense-door process, it precedes the Javana cittas, the Kusala and Akusala cittas, which follow. So without that citta performing that function after the Vipaka cittas in the sense-door process, the Kusala and Akusala cittas couldn't arise. That's why it's like a bridging citta, or makes way for the Kusala and Akusala cittas to follow.
I said, if Votapanna doesn't have the function of determining, now what determines whether the following Javana is Kusala or Akusala?
The main determining factor, the main conditioning factor, is Pakatu Upanisya Pachya, the natural decisive support condition, the habitual tendencies, like now after seeing a visible object, usually ignorance or attachment arises instantly. But for the arahat, no conditions for ignorance or attachment to arise, even though Votapanna is arising before those cittas. So it is the accumulated tendency, the habit, which conditions what kind of cittas will arise following the seeing right now. So is there the habit of being attached to what is seen at this very moment? That is likely to condition the attachment at this moment and this moment, no matter whether we're in the forest or the temple or here in the discussion.
So 99% of Javana Citta, the first moment of Javana Citta, or our Javana Citta, would be Akusala. There is no possibility of having Kusala Javana Citta. Can we say that?
Usually Akusala. That's okay. All we can say.
Okay, thank you.
But who knows? Maybe conditions for Kusala from time to time, and it depends on the degree of understanding.
Can I ask more about Khunsa Jin often says that from the book, it has no meaning. And from the book, I cannot remember that Votapanna Citta is Kriya. I didn't remember if it was Vipaka or Kriya. How can Kriya, in this sense, not for the Arahata, but for daily life, Citta, make more sense to me, that it makes sense? You said it's a bridge when it's Votapanna Sara, but there's other Kriya Cittas. How can this more speak to me more, that it makes sense?
The point of Kriya Cittas is that they're not Kusala, they're not Akusala, they're not Vipaka. They are, we use the word inoperative in English. So if it was a determining citta, it would be Kusala or Akusala. So the point of stressing it's a Kriya citta is to show that it's not kusala or akusala, like the panchadwara vajana citta is a kriya citta. It doesn't mind or have any say in whether what kind of object will follow. It just averts to that object which has impinged on the sense space. It's an inoperative citta. The manodwara vajana citta is a kriya citta, and it just averts to the object which is being experienced through the mind door. So kriya citta just means not kusala, akusala, or vipaka.
And how would it then compare to the Svipancha Vijnana? Is very obvious for me that it's vipaka, but the successive two...
The Panchadwara Vajana's kriya citta.
I'm not Dvaravajana, the Dvipancha Vijnana, I mean, the moment of seeing and hearing. That's from very obvious that it's vipaka, but the Sampatichana and the Santirana not so much. Why are they vipaka?
Because they're not known, they don't appear. So there's no very little understanding of what they are, but we just learn that they are two more vipaka cittas.
So that's from
the book. There are two more vipaka cittas that follow before the kriya citta, and then the kusala or akusala cittas.
But sometimes Kunshi Jin has little hints like why there would be virya or not, that the citta needs the energy because it doesn't get it anymore from kama. Which would be the case of maybe the kriya citta after the vipaka cittas. So there's nothing that speaks more to the mind than just learning it from the book that Sampatichana and Santirana are vipaka.
So I just understand that seeing and hearing their vipaka cittas with just seven chetasikas, but they have to be followed by two more vipaka cittas, which need more chetasikas because they're stronger cittas. They need more chetasikas to experience the object. So they have to be accompanied by vitaka, which touches the object in order for them to arise and experience it. But virya, I think you mentioned energy. Virya doesn't arise with the ahetuka cittas apart from two of them, the manodwara vajana citta and the hasitupata, which we don't have to think about. So the virya arises with the kusala or akusala cittas that follow.
How many cittas can be known in a day?
Can be known. The ones that appear, like Svipancha Vijnanas for sure. I don't know, thinking maybe as well. I'm not sure about thinking.
There are many cittas, but how many can be known in a day? See? Yes. Only seeing, now hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking.
Thinking as well, yes.
And cetasikas, see? At moment of attachment is known, can be known, but not the citta which accompanies with the attachment is known. So no matter how many cittas are there, only seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. But Buddha thought about all of them to be known as they cannot arise at will, but only by conditions like anantarapajya and samanantarapajya. That's why just understand the characteristic of seeing or hearing or thinking, smelling, as that which experiences an object. Otherwise, the characteristic of that which experiences the object and that which cannot experience the object cannot be known at all. That they are dhammas, but they are different dhammas. no matter the rupa or the rama, cannot be taken for permanent or anyone or anything at all. So no matter when and where and what, right now, hardness. Some might think that it's too natural, too common to be known, but in truth, it's just like other reality arises and falls away, and it has its own characteristic. Has nothing. Hardness is just hard. It cannot be anything at all. No matter we fight for the land or for the island or whatever, it's only for hardness. In truth. That's why I understand the absolute truth can let go ignorance and attachment. That it doesn't mean anything at all. Whatever just arises and falls away, not only in this life, all lives in the past and present and future, no one there at all. This is to learn to understand what Buddha enlightened, the truth of this very moment, as no one and no thing. And there are even many chetasikas, many chittas. It is known only when it's there and then gone. That which has gone cannot be known, only that which is now appearing. So short. No selection. It depends on what moment can be object of understanding as it is. This is intellectual understanding to condition moment of beginning to understand what is there now, little by little, as it is, as no thing, no one at all.
And it is intellectual understanding because by the time I think about hardness, hardness has already gone a long time.
And seeing and hearing and thinking the same, all gone, never to return. To have confidence of the truth that it can be known a little more directly until what appears can appear as it is, little by little, but not as vipassana jnana, much more clearer and clearer. So now, the object which appears now does not appear well because it appears as things and people. How can it appear as it is? The rapidity of the succession. So there is the understanding of ignorance of whatever is there. Layers and layers, on and on and on. If there is no understanding of what is there now, how can there be the understanding of next moment? What would be there or what will be there? Unexpected, unknown. So only when it's there, no matter it falls away, arise again and fall away again, but the arising and falling away does not show up. So it's only the nimitta of a reality, of seeing, of hearing, of thinking, and nimitta of that which arises together many moments, condition, shape, and form, to take it for something in life from moment of birth to death. So the teachings about what is there now can condition the understanding of its truth as it's not there anymore, little by little. Let go the past, don't mind about the future, which hasn't come yet. So just now, seeing a reality, it's real, it sees. Beginning to think about it little by little. And when it's moment of just attend to the characteristic that it has to be known because it's there to be known. But when there's no understanding of the truth, it's something all the time.
Thank you very much, Ajahn. And your questions are very precise because when you ask, can it be known? Then we're referring to those wise who have experienced moments of satipatthana. But when you ask, is it known at this moment, you're asking me, then the answer is no.
To be truthful.
Yes.
And panya is truthful.
Yeah. But this is a very important distinction, because if we understand it differently, like, can I know it? Then it's what you explain right now. Then it is a thing with many details. And it's not a reality. Yes, thank you.
Another way to put it was yesterday I was discussing with Tadao about Sobhanachittas, and this was in the context of 54 kinds of Kamavatra chittas. These are the chittas that are not Rupa Jhana chittas, not Arupa Jhana chittas, not Nakutra chittas, but the chittas now Kamavatra chittas. And there are 54 Kamavatra chittas, but of those, as we discussed yesterday, 8 are Mahakirya chittas of the Arahat, so they don't apply in daily life. And one is the Hasitupada chitta, one of the Ahetuka chittas I mentioned. So that's 9 chittas that cannot possibly arise in the life of a worldling. So that means there are 45 chittas. And of those, 12 are akusala, 8 kinds of lobha, but 4 of the kinds of lobha arise with indifferent feeling, neutral feeling. Can there be, or is there any understanding of any lobha with indifferent feelings? Only 4 kinds arise with pleasant feeling. And 2 of those are moha mula chittas, chittas arising with ignorance, without attachment, without aversion. Is there any understanding of the 2 with ignorance? 2 with dosa, okay. And then of the 18 ahetuka chittas I mentioned before, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, 10, okay. Everyone knows there's seeing and hearing, but what about the panchadwara vajana chitta? What about the manodwara vajana chitta? And as mentioned, of course, not the Hasitupata chitta. And then of the Mahavipaka chittas, the same apart from, sorry, the 12 akusala and then the 18 ahetuka and then 24 Sobhanachittas we talked about yesterday, 8 Mahakusala chittas. So these are the kusala chittas, which are not jhana or arupa jhana, arising with sobhana factors. But again, what about the kusala chittas with indifferent feeling, or the very weak kusala chittas? And what about the kusala vipaka chittas, apart from seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching? What is known? So we can see that so little is known, actually, so few of these chittas that arise appear in daily life apart from seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking with anger, thinking with strong attachment, thinking with kindness, thinking with generosity. But mostly, so little is known about them.
One can add that it's not a problem that all these other jittas are not known, because they don't appear. And the purpose of developing understanding is to have a better understanding of what does appear, because it's those that are taken for being what they are not. And so there's no need to have understanding of realities that don't appear. Yeah, if there is understanding of the realities that do appear, then that is what brings the development of insight. Well, that is insight, of course, that is to be developed. And realities that don't appear are not mistaken for something that they're not, so they don't need to be the object of understanding.
So reading or hearing about these other chittas that don't appear, like the Sampatichana, Santirana, and these other Hetuka chittas, is just to show that actually this is life, just one citta after another, completely unknown. No one there, no thing there, just different cittas arising, performing their functions, each one arising by different conditions, falling away instantly. So it's just to help understand that no self that has any experiences, no one that is afraid or angry or happy or sad, just different cittas arising, performing their functions, falling away instantly.
And here there's a tricky thing again with preciseness of speech. Kunsa Jean and Jonathan say that only the realities that can be known should be object of understanding, or can be object of understanding. But that's something else than understanding that the other ones are there. Do you remember the last phrase you said, Sarah?
Just to consider that there are different cittas arising and falling away, each one following the other by anantrapachya, to help understand that what appears now is not anyone or anything. Seeing
right.
Now is just that which experiences. It's just one citta in a process, not anything that lasts for more than an instant. No act of seeing, no act of hearing, no act of giving, just different cittas arising, performing their functions. So understanding seeing now as Dhamma, as anatta.
Right, but the difference is that you're saying it helps to understand. And Jonathan and Kunsa Jean,
Sarah's
also
saying
said,
it helps to show how it's possible.
Yes, but you say object of understanding, and that's something else than help to understand.
So what now is the object to be understood? What appears now? Otherwise,
well,
we just go on thinking and thinking about it, but forget about the understanding right now of what appears, what can be known now.
What can be known now is what Kunsa Jean helped me to recall, that it's only 10.
But
she
what
does
appear now? So seeing now, or
well, that's,
confusion
yeah,
now. So it's actually what appears right now, not just the story about it. So when considering the details, if it just conditions more confusion or more thinking about stories of realities and doesn't help the understanding at this moment, then it's not beneficial now. So the purpose of all the teachings, all the details the Buddha taught, is just for the sake of understanding right now what appears. Just thinking now, not chanting, thinking, confusion now, seeing now, just what appears right now, because this is life at this moment.
Yes, I get the difference. Thank you.
My personal experience is the sense door process on a pariyatta level is help condition intellectual confidence, like the odor, no one can change the odor. So it help appreciate the anatta-ness of each moment. But for the real big confidence, that would be the satipatthana. So that can only be possible, can only be conditioned by the right gochara here, right?
That direct understanding, there has to be the wearing away of the wrong view of someone and someone's experience and something that is experienced. So there has to be the considering different aspects, considering about khandhas, considering about ayatanas, considering about different cittas to really wear away the idea of someone that is experiencing. It's not enough just to hear that there is seeing now or hearing now, because the idea of self is so deeply rooted. So this is why we discuss more about dharmas from different angles, different aspects, to really wear away and for there to be confidence that there really is just Dhamma arising and falling away now.
So it's possible to study all these details with an idea of self, and which would reinforce the idea of self rather than help to explain how it's possible. One has to bear that in mind, that the information is useful if if properly understood.
We discussed the last couple of days, there are many monks, many experts who can know all the details and can recount them in Pali, but if it's not assisting the understanding of what appears right now as no self, then it's no use at all.
I think for those that have the accumulation to look into the finer detail, that's fine. And if that is the accumulated tendency, then it's going to happen. So, but for everyone, whether regardless of what their tendency is in relation to level of detail, what is always important is what is appearing at the present moment and can be the object of understanding.
Come back to the snake simile about, which I mentioned the other day, that when it refers to those that study the Abhidharma and get lost in the detail, it can lead to madness, grasping the snake in the wrong way, just getting obsessed with details and forgetting completely about understanding what appears right now.
Could this be why what I heard on the audio, monks question whether the Abhidhamma was taught by the Buddha? Of course it was, but the details of the Visuddhimagga are for those who have, like Jonathan said, accumulations for studying it so much and in detail explaining it. But the Buddha was more about seeing now, hearing now, although he knew all this and did explain it to those who could understand it. Is this the same as what we're saying now?
Well, of course, the Buddha could understand the accumulated tendencies of his listeners, so he knew what was most beneficial for them to hear. That was his concern at the time. Much of what we are discussing can be found in some form or other mentioned in the suttas, but not in the form that we have it in the Abhidhamma.
Ajahn, I have a different question, a different topic, which comes up quite often by a friend on DSG, and I brought it up once before, but I'm bringing it up again. The friend mentions that many well-known teachers teach that the karma during the last life has more effect than karma from previous lives and is more likely to determine the rebirth. And they give the well-known simile of the cattle in coming into the pen and the last in, the first out. And I looked at the commentary where this is referred to, and it talks about, because of being very close to the time of death, that which is near gives its result first. But I think that when it talks about being very close to the time of death and giving its result first, I think it's referring to the last Javana cittas, the Kusala or Akusala cittas conditioned by karma that bring the result in the next life. It's not referring to how any karma during the last life has more effect than previous lives. Do you have any further comments?
We understand what you just saw. Can you condition the understanding of the truth of this moment? We take quite a long time to think about that. But what about this moment? Keep on postponing about other stories.
The point is that this friend repeats this quite often, because I think when it's wrongly understood, it conditions the idea of having to perform certain deeds at the end of life and this and that. So it distracts from the understanding at this moment because of the idea that what is deeds performed at the end or what are going to have most result and so on.
Seems like anyone who can understand that can understand the truth of this moment. Impossible. That's why if we talk about karma and karma before death and moment of before death, what about the understanding of the absolute truth at that very moment?
It's just thinking along about a long story about different karmas and what will be the result and what will happen to this person, that person, not understanding about Dharma now as anatta and for sure.
If they are interested, they can read in the book and think a lot about it and then can have their own answer without understanding the truth. And if we follow on and on, it's useless. Yes. That's why to be a good friend. If they can
teaching more and more without understanding.
And when there's the understanding of this moment, no doubt about that moment, it can be understood for sure. That's why we just talk about what is there now, because there's not enough understanding of the truth as no one and no thing. And it takes time to let go of the idea of self because it has been accumulated years and years ago, longer than that. So a moment of understanding is the only reality which will let go wrong understanding little by little. That's why we talk about the realities in case that it is conditioned for thinking about it later at any time. Just thinking about it is so very rare. Think about other things more in a day. Even right now, they can be thinking about other things in between. Pakatupanisya pachaya. See, no one can do anything. Only hearing again, 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 and more ignorance again and again, again, and a little understanding again and again, little by little. That's the way it is.
So, Sarah, I think that kind of indirectly answers the question about karma conditioning, the habitual karma, whatever that was asked. Atan just said that if there's understanding now and accumulated, it can condition understanding later. But when? Depends on conditions. So it's not like it's happening now. It must happen immediately following our chances of happening more and more. It's all up to conditions.
And what I understand is that the main point is that if there is no understanding of dharmas as anatta now, if there's no understanding of what karma is and how any karma can bring its result unexpectedly at any time and any kusala or akusala cittas arise unexpectedly by pakutu upanisya pachya, if this is not understood at this moment, then whatever one reads or hears about karma and death and so on, it can't be understood because it's all taken for someone and someone's life and someone's rebirth and so on. So my deeds, my acts of merit and so on. So whatever the topic, actually it has to come back to the understanding right now. If there's no understanding of what is Dharma or what is anatta now, whatever one hears will be misunderstood and one will just disagree and argue and have one's own interpretation.
I do understand now the wrong understanding of those who meditate, because they also, and me before, think the most important thing is understanding this moment. But the mistake is that there's a belief that we can know it right now. But I see the big misunderstanding, but I understand as well.
Yes, they think it can be known by the intention to know it, the intention to focus on it.
Yes.
It's a lack of understanding of the conditioned nature of realities.
Right. So that's where the Abhidhamma is important. But the initial idea is that it's important to know this moment.
And that's the same point of however much one talks about meditation or temples or so on. If there's not the understanding of Dhammas now, what appears now as Dhamma, as anatta, then one will go on arguing or clinging to other ideas. There cannot be any understanding of why it's not the right way to focus on an object or go to a particular place. So there has to be the understanding of seeing now, hearing, hardness, whatever appears now as not self.
So it has to be
from the beginning.
Yeah, what they miss out on too, I believe, especially Shanti, is the understanding of the conditioned nature of Dhamma. You know, so there's so much the idea of, you know, control, or, you know, what you doing something. Another aspect that I was thinking of, yes, came up yesterday, but that one of the at Sotapati Magga, there is eradicated a silabbata paramasa, you know, so that behavior that is unhelpful, that clings, that's inimical, or that goes against the nature of Dhamma. So that behavior that is unhelpful, and that's what so many people are engaged in these days. Behavior, silabbata, that's where you get that word silabbata, which means the cycle of, or a way of behaving that's clinging to the nature of Dhamma that appears now. And there is misunderstanding about that.
Sarah, may I just ask you to, actually it was something that Jonathan commented on, but it was in relation to you, to what you were saying. And Jonathan pointed out that the detail that you were describing was really to show what's possible. And I think I found myself reflecting that when Ajahn often asks about, you know, what is seen now, and if the answer is someone and something, then clearly there is wrong understanding. However, it's also an indication that that there is an acknowledgement that somewhere in a process that has come about, or in other words, there are certain processes that lead to taking what is real for someone and something. And by analysing the details of that process, it becomes possible to see an alternate process which actually leads to a different perception of what appears. I think what I wonder about is, because my tendency is not to, I suppose, be so interested in the detail, but interested in the process and the logic of that process. Now, this is at an intellectual level, because I know that logic is not operative in terms of the characteristic and function of Panya. But I think what I'm trying to get at is whether having a broader view of the detail can also help in terms of arriving at an understanding of anatta.
Just to give a couple of examples that I think are quite helpful, like we know that when there is the idea that I see Maeve and that Maeve exists, we know that this is the wrong idea of self. But when we learn that, for example, the very subtle kind of wrong view, the asava, can even arise in a sense door process when visible object is the object, before there's any idea of color or shape or form, before there's any thinking about someone there, we realize how very subtle and deep-rooted it is, and how the kind of wrong view of self we may think of when we think this is a table that is seen, or this is a person sitting on my right. This is just the tip of the iceberg, because there are more and more and more subtle layers. So appreciating when the very subtle wrong view can arise so quickly after seeing, long before there's an idea of someone there, shows how deep-rooted it is. Or another example that we often use, people talk a lot about making an effort, making the effort to be aware, going to a place, trying not to have akusala. But we learn that virya, chetasika, arises with almost every citta except for those ahetuka ones like seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. So at every moment of kusala and akusala in a day, there is virya. Even in deep sleep, when boanga cittas arise, virya is there. So actually there is virya at every moment, and it shows that it's anatta, because it's not anyone doing anything. By the time there's the idea of I'm making an effort to speak politely, for example, countless kusala and akusala cittas with virya have arisen and fallen away. So I think that if it helps a little more understanding that there really is no self, and that these different realities arise by conditions, not by anyone doing anything, then it's beneficial. But if what we hear just leads to confusion and disturbance, then it's not helpful at that time. And we never know, like what we heard 10 years or 40 years or 50 years ago that seemed to be nonsense might be quite useful right now. So we never know when some detail may be useful to the understanding right now.
Yes, helpful, Sarah, because I think I can hear you saying that there's the broad process, but there's also the processes that are more and more refined, and that because the process itself is conditioned, and perhaps that goes to a sort of a certain readiness that there can be an understanding at a broader level, to sort of maybe grasp something about the general nature of what is being talked about. And then the more it's talked about and considered, then the more refined it becomes. So something which didn't seem particularly relevant at some point, as you say, assumes a relevance. But the litmus test is always, is it leading to more and more appreciation of the conditionality
well, understanding now.
Yes.
Because in the beginning, we all love the stories. We all enjoy hearing about the different stories. So even when we study Dharma, we're lost in the world of different stories. But the understanding has to come closer and closer to the Paramatta Dharmas at this moment. But there's a lot of resistance because of the attachment to stories and situations. Who wants to keep hearing about seeing, about Virya, about different realities now? But it's only by coming closer and closer to the Paramatta Dharmas that their understanding can really develop.
I suppose this attachment to story is because it's the conventional way of making sense of things, or of having some idea of controlling the level of comprehension, and also you're right, it's a tough one to give up, that one.
So by understanding more about the Dharmas, it means when one does read the stories, there's more appreciation that actually it's in this conventional language, but it's about when we read about the four right efforts and so on, it's in the language that sounds conventional, but actually it's about the Paramatta Dharmas.
Yes, I was just going to add, Maeve, that the anattaness that's to be known more about, just like the impermanence and the unsatisfactoriness, which are the other two characteristics, is the impermanence and the anattaness of conditioned dhammas. So the reflection can only take one so far as long as there is no understanding of conditioned dhammas. In other words, reflecting on anattaness is not a condition for understanding conditioned dhammas. It's understanding conditioned dhammas that is a condition for seeing anattaness. The broad understanding can only exist so much. And the other brief point to mention was the processes that we talked about, the processes that lead us to mistake the present moment for seeing when in fact it's just thinking about something that's been seen or whatever. The processes remain the same for everyone. As understanding develops, however, there's more understanding and less mistaking of realities, but the processes remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the accumulated understanding helps one to be less mistaken about the nature of the present moment reality.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jonathan.
Jan, when you said to Carmen, "Don't look at me," two or three times, I think this is actually quite relevant to this discussion, because we're so influenced by the appearance, the sound of the voice, the whole story. But what about the Dharmas? Would you like to elaborate further? What is meant by "don't look at me"?
The word is more important, no matter who says. So if you think this person is reliable or something like that, from what? Looking or hearing or considering. That's why I think that even we look at someone while he's talking, it doesn't matter as long as there is attention to the word to understand the truth.
I think, Sarah, it was in the context of Chanti listening to the teachers you respect. So that's what it started out from. Carmen, sorry. You know, and so sometimes it happens that we're listening to a particular person who we respect, and instead of paying more attention to the message, we're just influenced by the person.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. So, Ken, I mean, I think as the Jhanas, I appreciate that explanation, Tanajan Kumkap. I found that very helpful, because I think it's a reminder of the attachment that there will be inevitably around teacher, and especially when potentially there is a lot of misunderstanding, because we've got a lot of personal investment, so to speak, in that person. And sometimes very difficult to let go of. And even when the understanding, the inverted commas understanding that we have is sometimes quite pernicious and dangerous because of the attachment, it's very, very difficult to break away.
Well, I took Ajahn's comments to be that what is important is the message, not the messenger.
If one's influenced by the messenger, it's easy not to hear what is right, or it's easy to just assume it's all right. So that's why it's the Dharma that is the teacher, not the messenger. And the reason I mentioned it was with regard to what I was discussing with Maeve, because we get lost in the story about the person and the situation and forget that actually it's just dharmas we're hearing about and developing understanding of.
But I have a lot of mudita for the dharmas that I see.
It can only happen to concept of beings.
Concepts of cheetahs and cheetah seekers. That we refer to as beings.
Can we talk more about what mudita is in terms of realities now?
So what is mudita?
Well, I've been informed by meditation teachers, but I know that it's a cittasika and it doesn't arise with all sobhana Chittas, it's a special one. And it's happiness for the welfare of others.
What kind of happiness?
Kusala.
Kusala, okay. Kusala joy, kusala happiness. For the welfare of others, or for the success, for the good fortune of the others.
Right.
So can there be any mudita for rupas? No.
No. And when I see that you're all smiling or that Kunsujin looks happy, then it's wrong. Of course, it's not mudita at all. Are you saying that?
So when one sees others taking interest and being happy in the understanding of Dharma, there can be mudita for those, what we call those beings. Actually, there are no beings, but it is for the joy of the cheetahs and cheetah seekers that we refer to as other beings.
And we do not have to know whether for the other beings it is kusala, because we cannot know, can we?
So just it's one's perception that there is joy, what you can see when someone is smiling and benefiting from the Dharma discussion. Then there can be mudita. And when we hear about others' wholesomeness, moments of kusala, teaching the Dharma, giving, when we say anumodana, that is mudita, appreciating the goodness, for example. It can arise in ordinary situations too, when someone tells you about their good news at work or something. There can be mudita, being glad for their good fortune.
Because you said kusala, but when you're saying for their work, it doesn't then have
it
to be
just
kusala.
Be rejoicing in their happiness, no matter kusala or akusala. One can't know anyway.
Yes.
Okay. Just being glad for their good fortune.
Thank you very much.
When anumodana, this is a kind of mudita.
We often, I think Jonathan's pointing to the fact too, that may not be mudita, chetasika particularly, but of course it will be referring to piti. And as you correctly pointed out, Sarah, that anumodana is composed of those two words, anu, which means following, or you know, you're following by appreciating the kusala of the other, whether it's giving or listening to Dhamma or teaching the Dhamma or whatever. So there can be piti at those moments.
Piti with the mudita and metta.
The object is more the kusala than the individual though, isn't it? One's appreciating the kusala.
Of the other's kusala, yes.
Of whoever, yeah.
Of course, actually, there's no other, but one's appreciating the other's kusala, what one takes for the other's kusala, but it is the kusala. So there can be appreciating with right understanding or without right understanding.
But I was under the impression, maybe mistaken, that appreciating kusala was itself a kind of kusala, not specifically mudita. But I don't know about that.
I'd be inclined to think that too. So, Tanajan Kap, then it seems to me there that just what Jonathan said, that there can be, like, when there is appreciation of the kusala of others, there will be kusala piti, but there doesn't have to be mudita there. Is that correct?
Lopa, like that way, is lopa mudita. When it enjoy having heard about the others' welfare and so on, healthy and so on. It's just lopa or mudita, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think they are suggesting that when it's kusala appreciation, not lobha, kusala appreciation of others' good deeds, I think their question is whether there must be mudita or not.
So I think that understanding more about the truth will condition the natural way of life, because understanding of whatever arises conditioned, no matter it is kusala or akusala, right understanding can understand that. Otherwise, there's clinging to have more and try to change the way of life in order to understand the truth, but that is not right, because it's attachment, lopa, clings to everything. That's why the more understanding, life goes on very natural, because of understanding whatever is there, whether it's known as a reality or not yet by conditions. Having patience to have understanding at moment of hearing and considering. And when akusala is there, it's natural. It's a reality that right understanding begin to understand, in order to become accustomed to that which is conditioned to arise and then following. That's why it takes quite a long time, eons and eons, to understand naturally by conditions of what is there now, little by little. Beginning just not forget it. And one knows that after hearing this, the moment of forgetting about what is heard. But understanding is there, that it can understand more when it hears more. That is an aspect of being patient, to be natural.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Ajahn, thank you for those useful reminders. I think it's very important that the kusala and understanding has to develop naturally, not with an idea of adjustments being made so that there can be more understanding in one's life.
It cannot be hurried up. Lopa is there, wanting again, clinging again.
And this is also why it depends so much on conditions. If there's the opportunity for discussion like this, for example, one is very fortunate to have these opportunities. The reminders are so useful. They are a condition for reflection later on. And without the opportunity to associate with other people who share one's interest in the Dhamma, progress is very difficult.
Because of the confidence of the truth, what is there can be known. When is there? Right now. Always now. When there is no awareness, no understanding of it yet, it's my conditions. Keep on seeing the value of the most precious moment of understanding, at moment of hearing about the truth of it. And there can be wise considering to understand what is true, what is not true, what is right and what is not right. And understanding at this point will lead one to more and more development of understanding. Otherwise, one rush to go to meditation center. Can there be any understanding? Where is lopa? Where is ignorance? Unseen.
And even for those who don't rush to go to meditation center, there are other more subtle ideas at mm-hmm. play that mm-hmm. Are not productive, not useful, wrong ideas.
Any moment, the conditions for ignorance and attachment are accumulated so much in life, not only this life. And only Panya can understand that, because the path is quite long, long way. And it begins now and begins again and again. To have confidence of this moment as it can be known when there's more understanding. And understand the difference, level of understanding, intellectual understanding. Just understand what is there as it is, but not understand the nature of it directly when it's there. Can anyone expect to have awareness on what object? Impossible. And right understanding, understand that. Never go wrong, because a firm confidence of the truth. The truth is there now.
And actually, it's totally useless to think about what will be the object of awareness or understanding, because it's all by conditions.
Does Uen and Hung, does giving up work mean more awareness? Totally beyond expectation or any idea.